I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
This is Bro on the Global Television Beat, Breaking Glass. Today's episode, Vida on Stars, fighting gentrification, but with a little sex. All over the news today is what amounts to articles about a new kind of white flight. Again, as in the 60s to the suburbs, but this time, which is also a COVID flight, from beleaguered cities to the supposed safety of rural areas in the suburbs. There's a different kind of flight, though, which is not voluntary but forced, and that is the decades-long process of gentrification, highlighted as it occurs in a Mexican neighborhood in the first season of the Starz series, Vida. The series loses focus in its two subsequent seasons, where it turns into an LGBT-themed telenovela, and was canceled after its third. But that's no reason not to celebrate the triumph of season one, where Vida tackles the problem of displacement of minority and poor populations better than any of its film and television rivals. The series opens with a bang as a young Mexican punk, a goth woman, Marisol or Mari, with a wicked message which she later conveys through spray paint, posts a manifesto declaring her anger and willingness to fight back over the dispossession of her neighborhood, the Boyle Heights section of Los Angeles. Boyle Heights has a long history as a progressive center of the city from its earliest Jewish, radical, and Japanese populations. It was one of the few neighborhoods in L.A. not to block minorities through what were called restrictive covenants. The neighborhood elected in 1949 the first Mexican and Latino city councilman, Edward Roy Ball, who acted to further open La Raza to its now predominantly Mexican population. It's currently the center of an attempt at a land grab by the wealthy dominant class, since with the resettling of more affluent residents in downtown L.A., it could become a more fashionable adjacent alternative to downtown's already increasing rents, something akin to hip and slightly cheaper Brooklyn's relationship to Manhattan. Mari's group, the Vigilantes, are activists, disturbed and frightened as they watch the neighborhood change around them. Real estate developers from the nearby Silver Lake eye the neighborhood, eager for those Trump dollars. In the vanguard of this attempted dislocation is a Latino-fronted real estate group, quote, sucking the blood out of the neighborhood. Against Mari and the activist groups Make America Brown Again, the Latino real estate agent Nelson Herrera is buying block after block of what the agency calls Bohi, the rebranding of Boyle Heights as a now fashionable location. This land grab utilizes white artists, whose outpost Mari spray paints, as their shock troops, while the real estate agency offers predatory loans that will result in residents losing their business. Returning to this neighborhood in turmoil are the two Hernandez sisters, Emma and Lynn, brought back at the death of their mother, the Vida of the title, and now proud possessors of their mother's debt-ridden bar that is a mainstay and casual gay center of the area. Emma's a tough-as-nails corporate businesswoman back from Chicago, and Lynn, with hippie tendencies, is a kind of palimpsest of all California countercultures, a vegan slacker comfortable in the upscale hipness of nearby Silver Lake. The sisters are thoroughly assimilated, and as the series opens, couldn't be further from the Mexican roots of the neighborhood. Emma wants immediately to get rid of the low-rent tenants in the bar building, many of them illegal, searching for a better clientele. Lynn, meanwhile, dropped by her Anglo boyfriend just after her mother's death, seeks solace in the orgiastic complacency of Silver Lake poolside sex. Both are brought down to earth and humanized by their reacquaintance with the neighborhood. Eddie, the gay wife of their mother, who also lays claim to the bar, finally shames Emma into not becoming an agent of dispossession herself by turning out the building's tenants. Lynn, meanwhile, while being adopted by the affluent Silver Lake crowd, has second thoughts as she is riding the bus home with a Mexican maid who cleans up the bodily fluids strewn by the privileged poolgoers. There is conflict between the two sisters as well, with Emma the responsible one and Lynn perpetually trying to find herself. But the more interesting in season one perpetual conflict is between Emma's corporate and Lynn's privileged alternative values and the fellow feeling of the neighborhood. What in many shows would be a one-episode pilot, where the sisters finally decide to stay at home and become a part of the neighborhood and adopting the bar, takes the entire season, because this is not just a personal conflict, but a conflict of values. More pointedly, it's about the sisters learning to reaccept as positive the ways the more communal culture they grew up in challenges what they learned from the capitalist and colonial culture outside the neighborhood. Two ways the culture manifests are its language and its food. The characters use a simplified form of Spanglish, that constant mixing of English and Spanish that is the mark of a people whose native tongue is devalued. The show does not translate either these phrases or the words to a multitude of Spanish songs, and so forces its Anglo audience to learn the phrases, many of which are street lingo, such as the amount of porqueria or bullcrap with which this neighborhood in the process of being moved in on has to contend. Elsewhere, the contentious Mari and a friend rebond over a chamillada, a flavored sliced ice drink, and Lynn gets into an argument with an upscale Mexican council member about putting Valentina, a brand of hot sauce, on a taco. Food is a signifier and imprint of childhood cultural heritage in the lives of these people. Neighborhood dispossession has been a popular theme in film and television recently, including a rival Netflix series also set in Boyle Heights, Gentified, much slicker and hipper than the series and much less effective. Robert Moses's mass dispossession of New York's African American and Hispanic populations is a subject that underlies the film Motherless Brooklyn, whose heart is in the right place, but which is ultimately done in by its clumsy play-by-the-numbers Chinatown clone narrative. The nearest rival to Vida is The Last Black Man in San Francisco, a thoughtful, quietly sad film about the cleansing of that city of its poor and even lower middle class by the ever-increasing rents because of its adjacency to Silicon Valley. But that film is perhaps too quiet and mournful, and so does not have the immediate visceral, that is, in-your-face impact of Vida. The second and third seasons lose focus, make some calculated mistakes, and pit rival groups against each other in what amounts to the same struggle. Emma's decision to cut Eddie, the conscience of the tavern, off from her stake in the bar in season two is supposedly, but not actually, rectified by Eddie's returning to the place, this time as bartender, not co-owner. Emma sells off a mural her mother had commissioned showing the two girls as taking part in the Mexican Revolution. The moment when it is papered over with a beer ad, one of indescribable sadness, goes unremarked. Season 3 features the return of the patriarchy in the form of the sister's lost father, whose full-force identification with a rigid religiosity threatens their following their mother in making the bar a space of LGBT freedom. A space, by the way, that is echoed by the all-LGBT writers' room of this show. That season, though, also sees Mari leaving the vigilantes, who themselves get sidetracked and campaign against the transgender bar. Mari turns from collective political work and instead is discovered by a website entrepreneur and transformed into a politically trendy influencer. Her revolutionary expression of the pain and resistance of her neighborhood is now converted into a more commercial edginess. There's nothing askew with the shift to a more telenovela confrontation with the religious patriarchy. The problem is that the reclaimed father now becomes the primary foe and the gentrification process is sidelined. There's no reason for this. The two are twin aspects of the same oppression, and it's needless and heedless to pit one against another, rather than seeing how they form a seamless whole. On a positive note, the series does end with the memory of Vida, with all her flaws, restored in the eyes of her daughters, and with a wise neighborhood woman's Santeria, that blend of Mexican native traditions with a more primitive Catholicism, posed as alternative psychic healing method, both to the more Western psychoanalysis and to the father's Pentecostal evangelism. Stars and sex as pay-per-view commodity. Stars, the network that broadcasts Vida in the U.S., is a pay-per-view channel whose rivals before the streaming services were HBO and Showtime. Stars, a latecomer to pay-per-view, often attempts to distinguish itself with the quantity of its nudity and sex. The famous opening scene in Preston Sturges' Sullivan's Travels recounts a director's ambitions to make a film of quality about people's lives during the Depression, which the studio executive keeps interjecting, but with a little sex. At Starz, the network execs seem to always be interjecting, for example, in the case of Vida's ambition to tackle the thorny issues of gentrification, yes, but with a lot of sex. So we get a montage of the two sisters, one lesbian, one straight, copulating as the opening of one show. There are several kinds of kink, as in Lynn's councilman wanting her to wear a strap-on, and Emma, programmatically gay, taking a former male inmate who is working for her for a sexual ride in her office to ease her anxiety. Sometimes this adds to character development. Emma realizes the form of sex she often engages in is simply a corporate brand of using people to satisfy her needs. But just as often, it's simply a way of stars hooking audiences, with a quantity and an outlandishness of nudity that makes Game of Thrones look like Camelot. This has been true in the history of the channel with a show such as Spartacus, nominally about the slave who challenged Rome, distinguishing itself from HBO's Rome and from other shows on that channel by adding blood-curdling sadistic violence to the blood-curdling sadistic sex. Even Outlander, the channel's most successful entry, is essentially a more sexually explicit, time-traveling, kinkily romantic bodice ripper. Star's actual glowing moment was Party Down. A two-season series about precarious workers in Hollywood who must labor with a catering company while trying to make dreams that are constantly shattered come true. It's a hilarious show about the more perpetual downside of the lives of Hollywood hangers-on. Mulholland Drive as a sitcom. Formerly, we might have labeled the sex on Stars as gratuitous, but that word does not capture the nature of what's going on here. Sex on Stars is corporate and commercial. It's commodified, often not about freedom of bodily expression, but a marketing gimmick to suck in audiences. Even the sex on Vita, which does often enhance character development, is ultimately not so much boundary breaking and liberating as a way of as in a way degrading. Not the sex itself, but the fact that it is often used simply as a means of addicting viewers and thus is devalued. Such is life in the ever more intense competition for viewers who, in the midst of an economic malaise, state and militia violence, and a pandemic, can scarcely afford food and medical supplies, much less adding pay channels on top of their already exorbitant cable bill. This is Bro on the Global Television Beat, Breaking Glass. Oh, change of mind,
something breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. Is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality, The End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes jazzistique et artistique, à notre écoute. Sound of breaking glass.